What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, already worried about second season syndrome. On this, our final show of the campaign, more pens than the WH Smith warehouse as two finals go the distance. Hats off to Luton as Town topple Coventry to take their seat at the top table. True to form, Owls leave it late as Josh Windapp maintains family tradition amid farcical scenes in League One. And the holy goalie helps Carlisle triumph in League Two. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. So that's that then. Another outstanding EFL season in the books, culminating this past weekend at Wembley with the three playoff finals. It's me, Matt Davis Adams, joined again by Adrian Clark. How are you doing, Clarky?
Hello. Yeah, very good. Very good. Not managed to get to Wembley for any of the finals, but I've been watching on with great interest, of course. Yeah, fantastic.
Well, I'm in the same camp as you, but we do have a Wembley correspondent on the line today, fresh from attending all three finals. He's actually still at our national stadium right now. Former Luton striker, he'll be enhancing that on his LinkedIn page, you can be sure. Sam Parkin. Sam, what a weekend you've had.
Do you want the menus from the media lounge, or is that just rubbing it in too much?
No, I'd imagine there's some sort of gourmet sausage roll, but yeah, pretty good.
It was a good fair fry up yesterday for the early kickoff, which went down well. Some kind of almost a corned beef hash, I would describe it as, which was a nice touch. See you, mate. That's just someone leaving Wembley in the background. It's been really good. Obviously, the games weren't thrilling, but it got some big moments, didn't we, I suppose, across the three games. Some incredible excitement at the tail end of all the ties. But yeah, it's a brilliant weekend. It is a brilliant weekend. Anyone that has the opportunity to get to a game.
Yeah, we could say that because none of our teams are involved in it. No. It is absolutely excruciating if you're right in the thick of it. We will dissect all three finals forensically shortly. But first, how about this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. For new customers that sign up only, you can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Right, let's get to Wembley.
Doughty. McFadden sticking close to Adebayo. He's done pretty well. He's done extremely well. He's done brilliantly. And Luton lead in the playoff final with a fabulous goal.
Look at this with a chance to run. We see it.
We pride ourselves on that, and I think then that shows in their football and their togetherness and their spirit, and that has been a big strength of ours, trying to play to our strengths and not apologising for that. You know, you are allowed to kick the ball in the air.
Congratulations to Luton Town, commiserations to Coventry City then. The Hatters prevailing on penalties after these sides once again couldn't be separated by 90 or, in this case, 120 minutes. Adrian, I want to ask if they're worthy winners. I feel like nobody was a worthy loser, if that's not a very mealy-mouthed thing to say. I mean, the stats were pretty much even. We knew that both games in the regular season had finished all square, and there was basically nothing between them. But, I mean, you give Luton just the edge based on how they responded to that horrible incident with Tom Lockyer, if nothing else?
If Coventry had won the shootout, it would have been just as fair as Luton winning the shootout. It was so even, really was. And over the course of the campaign, I guess the right team has gone up because Luton were right up there sort of pushing for automatic promotion, didn't quite make it. Coventry obviously snuck in off the rails, didn't they? So I think we've probably come to the right conclusion. But on the day, I wouldn't say that Luton were better than Coventry. I thought it was a dead heat. I genuinely did. I thought Luton were magnificent in the first half. Their tactical approach rocked Coventry. They had no real answer. The front two wreaked absolute havoc. Great goal on the break. But then Mark Robbins, as he so often does, read the game. He read the game brilliantly. And he made the right changes tactically. He brought on Godden, and it stopped Luton producing quality into Luton's front men from the back. So suddenly, you know, they were feeding off scraps. They were pressing much better. And they imposed themselves, Coventry, and fully deserved to be one apiece at the end of full time. Extra time was a write-off. It was just a slugfest. Both teams windmilling each other and missing. And then it's down to Penn's, isn't it? So, I thought Mark Robbins, after the game, was very humble. Well, both managers were brilliant, I thought, in their words after the game. We'll get to that, I'm sure. But Robin's reading of the game was spot on. He also said that Gus Hammers having to come off swung the momentum away from Coventry, and I would absolutely agree with that too. So yeah, look, it was dramatic. I tell you what, I felt so nervous watching that shootout. You know, I've got no horse in the race, but I felt nerves for all the players having to take one. Great balls of steel, a lot of them.
Mm. Yeah, we'll get to the shootout shortly. But Sam, from being in the stadium, tell us how it was when Tom Lockyer got that horrible blow to the head. You know, as far as we know at time of recording, he's okay. We saw the pictures of him on social media that his dad put up of him celebrating. But that must have sucked the air out of the stadium, mustn't it? At least the Luton end. It required a bit of a rejig, and Rob Edwards again showed his kind of qualities in coming on and sorting that out at what was a horrible time for him as well as everybody else.
Yeah, definitely. I think nobody saw it is the honest truth. Certainly the people that I was around weren't sure as to why he'd gone to ground. It was only afterwards looking on Twitter, I think it was, that we saw him go to the deck. So, yeah, incredibly worrying. Yes, but you always see the physio from the opposition going on at that stage when it's something as concerning as that. And yeah, brilliant that he seems to be okay and that he was up after the game and what have you, and communicating with the lads, having a chat with Carlton Morris, I think it was, on the pitch. But yeah, that was a huge worry. I thought it made it probably more of a draining afternoon than it already was going to be, you know, with the penalties, the extra time. I thought it really took its toll on everyone, to be honest. In a football sake term, the change of Reece Burke, obviously you can come on, I think, from the cold when you haven't been selected, and it can be really difficult, I think, in a massive game like it was. But to roll your sleeves up and give what I thought was a hero's performance.
He was good, wasn't he?
I really thought it was. And I saw him warming up, you know, straight away when Lockyer was down. And I thought, you know, this is a moment which could go one of two ways. He really produced for his teammates and for his manager and the fans. I thought it was a stellar performance from him. And obviously, yeah, Osho changed his role in the back three as well. Outside of Jordan Clark, but Reece Burke was probably the best Luton player, you know, across the piece. So enormous credit has to go to him. And the only thing that matters is obviously that Tom Lockyer's all right.
And he's going to be a Premier League player next season. How difficult is it, Adrian, when that happens, when a teammate of yours gets a serious injury and you don't know how they are? Is it easy to put out your mind because of the magnitude of the occasion, or is that something that's always going to be eating away at you while the game's going on?
Yeah, you have to block it out is the simple answer. You've got no option. And I was always quite good at doing things like that, sort of parking that bad news or those bad thoughts just until afterwards. It's obviously during breaks in play, at the end of, you know, at half time, at full time, extra time break. That's when those kind of thoughts might creep into the players' heads. But yeah, I thought they did a really good job of sort of almost using it as a fuel to go on and do it for Tom Lockyer. So, and you know, afterwards, again, I was so impressed by the words of the Luton players. They had sympathy for Coventry, and all they kept wanting to talk about was, you know, doing it for their teammate and what a legend he's been this season. So no, full credit to them for blocking out the concern. But you've got a job to do, and you just, if the game's going on, you've got to concentrate on it. And personally, I found it relatively easy to just, yeah, block things out. I don't know if a Sam was similar. Obviously, it's not every day that you get an incident like that. But if someone, you know, has maybe broken their leg or something, you've got to park it.
And as you said, you know, the Gus Harmer injury almost as significant in terms of how the game was at that time. So we go into extra time. Sam Ching, as a man who was more relieved in the whole of our nation's capital this weekend than Jonathan Panzo?
No, probably not. I mean, it was a really bad mistake, wasn't it? And almost so costly. I suppose, would Joe Taylor be feeling relief? Possibly, the way that they celebrated the goal. Obviously, the biggest moment of his career, it would have been had it counted. I did think there was a suspicion of handball straight away when I was watching the game, obviously quite far away from it. Stuck it away well. Obviously, the celebrations went on and on and on. I was in a good position to see the whole bench. I think Gab Osho was the main one who'd made it all the way around to the opposite corner flag before they realised that it was going to be checked. But yeah, to step up in the shootout, Taylor, that's what I'm getting to. Mm. I thought showed enormous courage, and I was willing him to score. Had he missed that, I would have really felt for him and worried about the immediate future, how he would get over that. So brilliant that he was able to stick it away. Interesting story, him as well. I think, speaking to someone, Mick Harford really likes him, so he's someone to look out for maybe in the coming years. But yeah, Panzo came on fresh into the action. Obviously, didn't go well for him. Didn't go well for any of the ex-Chelsea contingent, did it? Casey Palmer came on for Harmer. I think that was a bit of a gamble because he hasn't had much football, but to be taken off again in extra time, that's a blow. And I'm sure we're going to come on to Darbo now. Mm. The one saving grace probably is you do have Adi Vivash at that club who has nurtured these players, who've known them since they were probably 12, 13, 14. Mm. If they need someone to turn to now, I'm sure AD will be there for them, and as he was when Palmer came off, and in the wake of that missed penalty as well, I saw AD make a beeline for the unlucky player Darbo.
Yeah, just very quickly on that disallowed goal, I think VAR did a great job there. You know, that is what it's for, isn't it? And I think that it would have been horrible actually for the game to have been decided by a goal that should have been ruled out. You know, it's horrible for Fankati Darbo in the end that it's his penalty miss that decides it. But in a way, I think it's better for that, something more natural than a goal that really shouldn't have stood. So, yeah, for me, that was a good use of VAR.
Believe it or not, I haven't seen the incident back yet. But, and I don't think there was a supporting teammate or a square pass on, but had Taylor looked for a teammate and he'd have subsequently put it into the net.
Yes, yes.
The goal stands.
Yes, exactly. But you'd have to be a machine to think like that in the heat of the moment, wouldn't you? I suppose you know it's hit your hand. Mm-hmm. So these days you probably should think to pass it, but it's so easy to sit here and say that, isn't it?
And Luton had the one in the first half, didn't they? I think that was maybe had two, did they? Was Adebayo had a handball, and there was one that was scrambled in very, very early on. So they had three goals maybe disallowed across the piece.
And that was really unlucky, the one at the far stick, because it was literally
the offside, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an offside, but it was an offside by a shin?
Yeah.
You know, the length between your foot and your shin. It was really, really close. So they ruffled feathers, that's for sure, Luton. And but Coventry, I think, up their game, because this was not the Coventry that we've known all season. This was a rank bad first half by their standards. So for them to turn it around and start to do their thing, and for Jokeres to go and run down the sides and tee up Harmer for that goal, I think show real character on their parts. So I think they've. Yeah, if they'd have gone through and won on penalties, I'd have said they deserved it. But because it was Luton, you know, I'm absolutely not going to begrudge them the promotion. You know, it's a great story. And they were the third best team over the course of the campaign. So, yeah, brilliant for Luton.
So we get to the shootout. Like you, Sam, I was really surprised to see Casey Palmer go off, having watched him, you know, throughout his teens. He's one of the best strikers of a dead ball you'll see. So he really must have been on one leg. But what it hammered home to me, Adrian, was, and it's easy to say this because of the way the shootout went, but it really does feel like a big advantage if you get to take the first kick. You know, if you score that, the pressure is on the other team throughout. And eventually that's what told. I know the stats say that you are more likely to win if you go first, but it feels like that was a big factor here.
Yeah, I was watching the toss of the coins. Now, has it always been the case that you have two tosses? Because that's what it appeared to be. The first
one
toss
for ends, one to go.
Yeah, maybe my mind is playing tricks on me, but from my memory, it was like, you know, the toss of the coin is where you get to choose one or the other. Do you want to go first or choose the ends? But maybe I'm imagining that. But they obviously won both heads and tails, didn't they, Luton Town? And that was a big leg up because the pressure just intensified on Coventry. By the time it got to four apiece, it was, it was sudden death, wasn't it? And it was just too much in the end. Obviously, a poor penalty, but we can all miss a penalty. And certainly under that kind of pressure, someone was going to crack. I just personally wish that it's always a save that denies a taker rather than the missing the target, because then all eyes are on them rather than the keeper getting the glory. That's the ideal shootout, but it wasn't to be on this occasion.
Yeah, again, Frankie Didabo, somebody that Sam and I watched, captain the Chelsea under-21 team, really good character, really horrible that it had to be him who missed. But from a Coventry point of view, Sam, Adi Vivash and Mark Robbins have signed contract extensions. There's no reason to think that they're going to do a Huddersfield, is there? They should be onwards and upwards kind of attitude, given the season that they've had.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to probably boil down to how many of their players they lose. In the main, the two players that are probably Premier League ready in Harmer and Jokeres. I expect one of them to leave, at least. You had that speculation about Callum O'Hare last summer as well. I don't know if it was Burnley that were in for him and Jokeres. There was certainly heavy interest in O'Hare. Whether that will be the case this year, given his lack of game time, I doubt. But yeah, that's going to be a big part of it, because, you know, the last few weeks, the majority of our commentary conversations have been dictated by the game plan resolving around one man. And yes, they were much better in the second period when Godden came on to help Jokeres. But that first pass in the midfield is always looking to turn the opposition or get Jokeres into the game. So that's become a massive part of this game plan under Mark Robbins, which before was lots of intricate stuff in the middle third of the pitch. Well, now they're quite direct and getting it forward. So they'll have to change tack to a degree if they lose him. So that's going to be a big factor. But yeah, I'm hugely optimistic that Robbins and Adi Vivash will continue to be a brilliant duo. And whatever they mould, I'm sure it will be enough to be mid-table or better next year. Whether I can see them having this season again, I probably doubt at this stage.
Yeah, I think from Coventry's perspective, I think it will be amazing if Jokeres and Harmer are both there next season. I think that both will be sold because they're Premier League ready. They are definitely good enough to thrive, I think, in the top flight. And I don't know if they'll stand in their way. Obviously, they'll look to maximise the fees. But if they can bring in, what would they bring in between them? 50 million? Getting towards that kind of ballpark, aren't you? And you can bring in some quality if you've got that kind of funds behind you this summer. And I think you've got to trust Mark Robbins and Adi Vivash. I think they're really two of the smartest minds outside of the Premier League. I genuinely do. I think they understand football. They've got great knowledge of players that work at that level. And I would back them to find the right players. But Sam is absolutely right. They've become a Jokeres team. Everything that they do is about releasing him early and his unbelievable runs down the sides, which cause so many issues. So they have to come up with a new game plan. You either buy an identikit, that's going to be hard, or you come up with a brand new way of playing. And I think that's what will happen for Coventry City. And people might think, well, you can't do that. How's that going to work? Well, look at Burnley. Burnley played prehistoric football last year, and now they're playing some of the sort of most modern, enterprising, pass and move through the thirds football that we've seen in years. So it can be done. It really can. But there'll be a lot of hard work that's got to go on that Coventry training ground.
What about your old club Luton then, Sam? What are they got to do to be competitive next year? Are they going to take the Forest blueprint, sign 30 players and get all their points at home?
There might be something in them taking the majority of the points at home, although they've loved a little 1-0 away from the Kenny the last few years. You know, they set up really well defensively. I don't think, knowing everything I do about the owners and, you know, following their rise the last few seasons, they're going to chuck loads of money at it. Mick Harford did say that there was a list yesterday for the potential of being in the Premier League, which took me a little by surprise. You probably should have, because they were in the playoffs last year. But, you know, I was wondering yesterday during the game, would Coventry and Luton have planned for that eventuality in the middle part of the season? I suppose you have to when you're up there. But the thought of Luton, you know, thinking about who's going to be Premier League ready is just still such a mad notion in my mind, in the nicest possible terms. So,
Can I ask you then, Sam? Sorry to interrupt. Can I ask you, out of that Luton starting 11, who is most suited, do you think, to the Premier League? Because I think you need pace, don't you? You need a bit of speed, I think. I think that's really important. I think that's one major quality. Like, who's the most likely to survive?
It's a good question. I think Lockyer's improvement this year, granted, you know, what happened at the weekend, but if he's okay, I think he's improved so much in the last year or two. You've got Osho and Bell who have time on their side, I suppose, to improve. Adebayo, I felt, was capable, maybe. I think he still needs polished, Adebayo, but we saw yesterday that there's something there. Carlton Morris is an excellent footballer as well. I think technically he could probably step up, but, you know, there's going to be a lot of business needed in every department. Let's face it. But all of them will be given an opportunity. Jordan Clark is another one I wanted to highlight. We haven't spoken about him yet. What a performance that was. I saw him after the game and I said, forget the promotion. Well, enjoy that. But you are, like, incredible today. What a performance from him. And he was playing, Simon Watts is the credit here, for Hyde 9 years ago in the National League against Luton, in Luton's penultimate game at that level. I mean, what a journey he's been on. And technically, he looked amazing yesterday and someone who could potentially become a regular feature in the Premier League. I don't know. I think it's just an amazing story. You hope that these funds, the influx of money that they will get from this, will go some way to building the new stadium, helping the new stadium and securing Luton, you know, his long-term future, I suppose. And, like, enormous credit to Gary Sweet, the people who have been in charge of the recruitment, I think. You know, the people that have, yeah, been in charge of the purse strings and keeping the budget right without spending, you know, above their means in the last few seasons. Whole team effort. But, yeah, credit to those guys that took the club over when it was in such dire straits.
I'd echo that. I saw Adebayo at Walsall not that long ago, really. He looked good, but raw and rough around the edges. Carlton Morris, I saw him for Shrewsbury, looking frustrated, on loan from Norwich, I think, at the time. And you wouldn't have said these were Premier League players in the making, but they were the two, you know, driving forces, really, especially in that first half at Wembley. So, yeah, they're just two examples. Clark, another. He was great. That touch for the goal was an absolute peach. Yeah,
and Pelly I'm so chuffed him. Who we heard from in the clip, made his debut for Luton in a 5-0 win at Alfreton.
Yeah, well, I've got the unwanted distinction of sort of going through all the leagues backwards. I'm going from the Premier League to the National League. I played in other leagues, but when you do it that way, it doesn't feel good. But he's done it the opposite way, and fair play. And he seems a character, doesn't he? And what struck me was the togetherness. I know it's a boring thing. People get fed up of hearing it, but I love it. I love to see a dressing room that is so tight and they're all buddies. And it goes such a long way to bringing success. Isn't it? I think skill and tactics and having a good manager, they represent 70% of it. But without that 30 of that spirit and character and camaraderie, you aren't going up. So, you know, that's absolutely pivotal.
Congratulations to Luton then. We're a bit biased because they mentioned our podcast in their programme and they let us speak to Rob Edwards and they've generally been brilliant with us all the way back to the Totally Football League Show days. But yeah, we'll be sad to lose you next year, but all the best. So Luton are out of the Championship. We've got a new participant in it as of next season. We'll talk about the League One playoff final next.
Time for a winner. about these fans, meaning us as players, what this club's mean to me since I've come here. They've been great to me and I've loved every minute.
Not many goals, just the one in fact, but drama by the bucket load on Bank Holiday Monday. Sheffield Wednesday left it till the latest possible moment before finally seeing off Barnsley after extra time. That after the Tykes had been reduced to 10 men in the 49th minute. 5 seconds left of extra time before Josh Windass's diving header. Sam, you're still at Wembley off the back of this one as we record. I'm not saying it was a tepid first half, but I did fall asleep. But my goodness me, it picked up shortly after the restart.
I was doing commentary, mate, and I was kipping. Yeah, it didn't get going. It was a bit back to front for both sides. I think given the season that they've had, the way they've ended the season, the Barnsley centre-backs, the back three in particular, kind of rolled their sleeves up and revelled in the physical battle against Smith and Gregory. That kind of left-to-right diagonal was a bit of a feature of the first half from a Sheffield Wednesday perspective, trying to get Patterson up against Cadden, which was a decent avenue for them, I suppose, because Patterson's a really... really aggressive header of the ball and won his fair share. But you need a little bit more than that, a little bit more craft. And I thought they played into Barnsley's hand to a degree. There was a little bit more rotation in Barnsley's midfield. But again, the gap between the midfield and the two centre-forwards was vast. So didn't get going at all. And obviously it was sparked into life by a red card. It needed something. At halftime, I was speaking to a few people around me on the gantry, and I said it needs a manager to be bold with his tactics or his personnel changes in the second half to just open this game up. Otherwise, it's that safety net of not conceding and taking it to the bitter end. And it looked like that, or it was going to take a red card or one of the best players having to go off or something. So the red card did change the dynamic, but if anything, I thought Barnsley improved in that second half, which was incredible to see, really. Yes, resilience and endeavour and rolling the sleeves up, and the fans created a good atmosphere because they probably felt injustice, but some good quality as well. So for the 90 minutes, Sheffield Wednesday didn't do enough to win. Didn't do enough to win. And a flurry of chances in extra time, which you expect when a team's down to 10 in the first half, when they didn't take one. Yeah, gearing up for penalties, and obviously we got an exciting end, but not for the Barnsley punters, unfortunately.
So we spoke, Adrian, about VAR doing good things in the Championship playoff final. Here, I don't know if we blame VAR. The referee, first of all, Tim Robinson, doesn't give a penalty for Barnsley after Lee Gregory challenges, let's say, Liam Kitching in the box. Looked like a pen to me, but he and VAR said no. And then it's basically seconds later that Adam Phillips fouls Gregory and gets sent off. Were you expecting intervention from the video assistant referee at this point? Should there have been? Michael Duff certainly felt that way.
Do you know what? I wasn't expecting them to overturn it. Not because I think that's the right thing to do, just because officials in charge of the VAR, the technology, are reluctant. They're so reluctant to go against the on-pitch guy, aren't they? It's got to be a clanger. And hand on heart, even though I think that is a yellow card, I can't say that it's a clanger. So that is the reason I think that it was given and that the original decision stood. I would have preferred the referee to have given a yellow card there. Not least because, you know, the player toes it away at the last possible moment while Phillips is in the process of making his challenge. It's made to look so much worse just because the ball gets towed away just in the nick of time. And he wasn't hurt. You know, it looked messy and it was, you know, it was clumsy, but I didn't think it was dangerous. And I think the letter of the law says if it's reckless and dangerous, it's a red. And for me, it fell short of that.
Yeah, Sam, it's one of those.
It's a big moment, yeah.
It's one of those, Sam, if a yellow card is shown, it's not getting upgraded to a red, is it?
No, I don't think so. I think there's so much going on here. That's why it's difficult. There's a lot of grey area. I think he was just trying to clear his lines, essentially, just play it into the channel. It's not even a tackle, really. He's trying to play the ball. So there's that in play. There's the fact that Lee Gregory's made a lot of it as well, and he's been clever in getting that touch and banging the floor and all that that came next. There's the follow through. So it's his trailing leg that actually makes the connection. And it's a messy challenge, isn't it? It's innocuous, but it's not a player flying in to win a 50-50. It's a player trying to clear a ball down the line. So I think that on reflection, there seems to be some talk that maybe had he gone and looked at the monitor, it would have been deemed not dangerous, I think. And it wasn't dangerous to Lee Gregory, was it? It wasn't going to be an injury for him. So, listen, I understand it, why it was given. I say that. I don't really understand the rules at the moment. But, you know, having seen various replays, I can't hand on heart say that's not a red card. So it's gone against Barnsley today. Michael Duff was furious about it. I think he was pretty magnanimous in defeat at the end of the game. But it's a sore one for them. I actually felt, just to touch on something tactically, just quickly before I forget it, because my mind's a bit all over the place, but actually to bring on Max Watters for Nicky Cadden in extra time and have two centre forwards on the pitch, I think was a really bold move. And I think it was for the second half of extra time. So that said to me, Michael Duff was saying, I don't want the lottery of penalties. We've been in pretty much command of this game, even since the red card. We might get a chance to win this in normal time. And on the flip side, Will Volks has a goal disallowed arriving, edge of the box. Windass gets a header, a free header, edge of the 6-yard box. Would they have maybe been trapped had they had that extra midfielder in there? We'll never know, but I just thought it made for quite an open end to the game. Credit Michael Duff, or maybe that was an error that didn't get it taken all the way to penalties.
We ought to give a mention to that brilliant Will Volks goal, an even better celebration only for the flag to be raised, a clear offside as well. Also, shout out to Barnsley's on loan Luton keeper, Harry Estard. He made some brilliant saves in the first half of extra time. Luke O'Connell maybe could have won it for Barnsley Clarkey, that chance, first half of extra time. I mean, they will be rueful looking back on this, the Tykes, even though they were hamstrung by that red card. It could have gone a different way.
They did have chances, didn't they? There's some good saves, weren't there, from both goalkeepers as well. There's one, I think, from Cameron Dawson. It is near post that was absolute worldy. Yeah, that's a huge moment. I think the Barnsley players can come away very much holding their heads up high here. You know, they fought like absolute tigers, made so many good blocks and played with real courage with 10 men. And I think Barnsley have every chance of being in the mix for automatic promotion next season. I don't think the teams coming down are of the same quality as the teams that have left the division. And in Duff, I think they've got a really good coach that's got a good strategy, excellent way of playing, loves young players, high energy, the pressing is brilliant. And I think that they will be brilliant again. They don't have, and this is actually in their favour, Barnsley, they don't have the star names as such. Maybe Mads Andersen. But apart from that, I don't know how many of their players are going to be cherry-picked by Championship clubs this summer. I think they can just build on what they've got. And if they pick the right people, I believe they will get promoted next season. So, yeah, in 12 months' time, Barnsley got a chance.
We shall see. By the way, listener, just to reaffirm, Sam is in Five Lives box at the moment. So if you can hear a bit of chatter in the background, that's that. But we're very grateful to them for letting us have it and record.
I didn't ask anyone, Matt. You get me in trouble there.
Sam is in a box for an unnamed broadcaster.
But before we move on, let's say well done, Sheffield Wednesday, as well. You know, they didn't play very well in the game. It's a brilliant winning goal, obviously, for Windass. You know, it's an iconic moment in their history, isn't it? You know, it's a brilliant, you know, I love to see a diving header. And even though they weren't great in this game, tactically, you can question Darren Moore's approach, you know, lacking ideas, not having any strikers to bring off the bench, et cetera, et cetera. They got so many points in the regular season. They absolutely deserve to go up. So in a way, we've like Luton, we've probably got the right result, even though on the day, you know, it's a slightly dubious win.
Yeah, it was a tough watch tonight. I think you have to, I don't know if we spoke about it on the previous podcast, but give Darren Moore and his staff enormous credit for the way they refocused on that second leg against Peterborough, all the work that went in in channeling positive feeling into the players. Whatever he did on the training ground, I think he deserves enormous credit for creating that siege mentality with the supporters, with everything before that second game against Hillsborough. That was enormous. And I also think it was a really difficult decision for him what team he started with today. So to go with that same attacking lineup that got the success was bold. He didn't get the performance today, but I thought that was a bold move from him. In terms of the in-game management again today, I was questioning it during the commentary. I can't lie. I thought that Barnsley were defending so comfortably that Sheffield Wednesday had to do something different, and they didn't. They persisted with playing long into the front two, trying to whip balls in that Anderson and Kitchen just mopped up continually. I thought just go to a 3-4-3, you know, use the width a little bit more, maybe hamstrung once more by that lack of game changes on the bench that Clarkie referred to during that semi-final, after that semi-final. All his strikers started again today. So yeah, he didn't have the ability to change things up. And that's why Barnsley maybe kept themselves in the game and looked as threatening, if not more so, because they had probably better front men to look towards on the bench. So yeah, I'd still question if the management team are getting the absolute best out of that side. But let's not take away from the achievement. And as Clarkie rightly says, 96 points or whatever it was, that should get you out of the division. And they're rightfully in the championship next season.
Yeah, 96 points. Let's give the last word to our friend Nick Miller, who tweeted shortly after full time. The time between the Windass goal and the final whistle, which I reckon was under a minute, he's right, was the only time Wednesday were ahead in the whole playoffs. So it doesn't matter if you win for the majority of it, as long as you're there for the final five seconds.
That's mad. That's absolutely crazy.
Congrats to Sheffield Wednesday, then. They are back in the championship. We'll look back at the League Two playoff final next.
Taylor Chartis can send Carlisle United to League One. And he has! Promotion secured for Carlisle United. For a fair while last season, they were concerned about going down. Now they're ending this campaign relishing going up. Super Paul Simpson, as he's known, finally has his day.
Isn't it? So I guess right. No, well, I had the preparation. Well, but still, it's about good guess. But I am not a hero. These guys are here because they had to run for 120 minutes. These guys are my hero. I just did my little part, but these guys are heroes.
Penalties needed on Sunday then. Carlisle edged out Stockport in the League Two final, finished 1-1 after 120 minutes. So a shootout required, and it was the Cumbrians who held their nerve, winning 5-4. Your old team, Adrian, for a bit, back in the third tier for the first time since 2014.
Oh, my old team. Yeah, no one will remember me at Carlisle, that is for sure. very, very brief spell. But yeah, no, I'm chuffed for them, though. It is a good club, really, really well supported. And I do like Paul Simpson. Obviously, he's had to go through a lot himself with the cancer diagnosis, and he's come back and just breathed fresh energy into the club, but also brought real tactical acumen as well. And a little bit like Mark Robbins, I think they're sort of the same breed, the same score. I know Paul Simpson's worked a lot with the FA, with the junior teams, you know, as a proper coach, but he's got a good eye. And I love the way he uses the strikers, and that was really keen. Well, that was really key, I should say, in this final, wasn't it? He went with the two up front and then he swapped them. And that was a bold move. Then he brought on Dennis and changed the shape. Having five good options in the forward areas is really important. And he uses it smartly. And I know it was by the finest of margins, but I did think on the day that Carlisle was slightly better than Stockport County, who only actually had one shot on target, which was, I think, Jack Stretton with a, you know, great run down the middle, knocked it into the top corner, sensational tip over from Thomas Holy. And that was the only shot they actually had on target, even though they had moments. massive miss, wasn't there, from Akil Wright, I think, that would have made it 2-0 from a free kick. I mean, honestly, I was terrible at heading. I think I scored 2 or 3 headers in my entire career. I had a proper 50p head, but I think I might have scored that because there was at least half the goal to aim at. Big moment.
Sam, how did you feel about this one? 50-50 possession. None of us had Carlisle anywhere near promotion at the start of the season, did we? But what was the key factor here? Was it them holding their nerve? Was it Stockport and those injuries kind of piling up toward the end of the season?
Yeah, I think a combination of Stockport's better players, maybe. Obviously, Wootton was a big miss. I think had they had him, a bit more football into Sarsavic, Collar, the outcome could have been different.
All half fit, weren't they? Their best players were half fit.
Yeah. And Paul Simpson was very quick to praise his front men and say that was the difference, really. Having that depth off the bench, the ability to change. I think he said he threw the kitchen sink in quite early. And I really admired that, actually. Tactically, it was pretty fascinating because I thought Stockport shaded the first half. The combination of Madden dropping in deep and Alafi running behind on the shoulder, particularly Mellish, where the goal came from, that was really problematic for Carlisle. John Mellish had a stinker for 45 minutes. Obviously, scored a lot of goals, did really well in midfield previously. He's been a regular feature left side of the back three. He was poor on the ball. He was yellow carded. Arguably, he was at fault. Obviously, it's credited as an own goal. He had to get tighter.
He had to get tighter.
I thought so. I said so in the commentary. I thought I was being a bit unkind, but yeah, he could have done a little bit better. So yeah, that was a problem for them. And going forward, they didn't really have a lot. Then comes the change from Simpson, 3-4-3 initially, proactive, 2 wide players. And then a little bit later, 4-4-2, 2 wingers, 2 out and out centre forwards. Edmondson ran around like a blue ass fly, knocking into people. And that physicality got the crowd up. They had a penalty appeal. And then the second phase of that move turns into the goal for Patrick. Amongst all this, Stockport actually changed to a back four, to a 4-2-3-1. Carlisle score. Immediately, Dave Challoner puts a centre-half on, goes back to his tried and tested 3-5-2. So there was loads going on tactically amongst it. But the main thing was, I think, Paul Simpson being really aggressive, getting that period in the second half where they turned the screw, created a few chances. Within that as well, the aforementioned Mellish, he's now in midfield. So bold tactical changes and also keeping Mellish on, who quite easily could have been having a shower at halftime, and he was really good as well. So that's massive credit to Paul Simpson and massive credit to Mellish for a great strength of character.
Really interesting thing, Clarkie. I'm not sure if you follow Training Ground Guru on Twitter, but they're well worth looking at. They put a piece out today with quotes from Paul Simpson and Rob Edwards. You mentioned that Paul Simpson was with the England underage teams. And Simpson said after the game, "I want to give the FA a lot of credit here. In my time there, we had a guy from the analysis department called Chris Markham, who did a huge study on penalties and how to go about it, and basically did a big presentation to all the England age groups. This is how you should approach a penalty shootout." And Rob Edwards said the same after Luton's win as well. He said, "We got this presentation for the England age groups and we've implemented what we learned in that into this shootout." It feels like it's something that, going back maybe to the time when you were playing, it was, well, it's a lottery, isn't it? You know, there's no point in practicing them. You just see how you do on the day. That's not the case anymore, is it? It is forensically analysed and you see the results, the fruits of when you do that.
Yeah, no, it is fascinating. And you're right. We did very little practice of penalties back in the day. Certainly no analysis, you know, very little even scouting, you know, just a few lines here and there from a scout that went to see the opposition. Things have changed a lot. I'm in between in terms of, if I was a current player, I wouldn't want to be overloaded with information because I think it can restrict you and just, you know, yeah, just put too many things in your head. But at the same time, knowledge, you know, having this knowledge and these little fine margins can make the difference. And the Luton players, am I right in saying that I think they were talking about having like someone in that was like a psychologist that was telling them how to breathe properly and how to block out the noise and to sort of just focus on what you're doing? And, you know, I do believe in all that. I really do. I think that's, you know, psychology is a massive part of football and it's probably still slightly underused by clubs around the country. So yeah, it's perhaps, yeah, no coincidence that Simpson and Edwards worked at the FA, had this presentation, and they've implemented it. Whoever's working for the FA at the moment, you know, if they want to get into the EFL, you know, they've got a good chance because they're obviously going to be hot property, and, you know, for good reason.
Yeah, the quote was, "You can't actually practice penalties, you can only prepare for them." Sam, Carlisle in League One next season, how are they going to do? They're going to need a lot of restructuring of the squad to be competitive, or are they going to be able to handle the step up?
Well, I said to him after the game that, you know, in my experience, Carlisle was quite a difficult place to go. The crowd can create a good atmosphere, should put more bums on seats, that type of thing. And he played it down quite a bit. So I think survival will be the ambition. I don't know what that's down to, whether there's not going to be loads of funds to strengthen. He spoke in the lead up to the game at the challenges that it presents being manager of Carlisle. That's probably, you know, recruiting is probably an issue. And that's why we've probably seen like the likes of Owen Moxon playing Scotland. And, you know, he's a local lad. I know that comes into play, of course. But, you know, you're shopping in a different basket, maybe, I think, at Carlisle. And people have got to commit to move to the area and stuff like that. So it probably presents its own problems. But yeah, I really like Paul Simpson. I've really enjoyed listening to him across this playoff campaign. They deserve to go up, I think, because they were the better side in this cup competition format. I think they were better than Stockport in the semi-final, and I think they shaded it at Wembley. So they deserve their opportunity. I don't know. I don't imagine that they're going to be a team that people are going to speak about challenging to get, you know, out of League One anytime soon. But I think Paul Simpson's a really talented manager, and the squad contains some decent players. They're going to need some help in the summer, like every club at that level that's promoted.
Yeah, I always think, you know, I've said this before, away form is a good indicator, and that they lost 6 of 23 away from home, which I think is a very, very good record for any team. You know, it's a tough division, and to have avoided defeat in 17 of 23 away games, I think tells you that they're going to be very well organised and tactically on point a lot of the time in League One. So yeah, on home turf, of course, like anyone, that they'll have a chance. But in those matches where you'll look at it and say, Carlisle are going to Charlton away, or they're going this place away, you think, oh, well, that's 3 points. I think they're going to make it difficult, and I don't think they're going to get smashed by too many teams in the division above. I think they can be competitive.
Yeah, important what they do in terms of their loan signings. Gordon, I thought, looked really good in the second leg of the semi-final and in the first half yesterday. He ran out of a bit of steam, but yeah, if they can pick up some savvy loanees will help them. And Paul Simpson, after the game, he spoke about basically just not doing anything different. You know, we're asking what the key was to this success, what's been behind the turnaround. And he just said, I'm the same as I was during the infancy of my managerial career. And I don't think it was because he's worked for the England setup, as Clarkie says, I don't think it was a kind of jibe at, jibe's not the right word, but, you know, having a go at the more modern manager or what have you. But
that's a jibe.
Yeah, is that a jibe? I took it as there's still place for being a really good man manager and a nice guy, I believe he seems to be. And he said, you know, we took them away in the summer and we got the boys to sing and they had a few drinks and all that, and like all the things that we did, me and Clarkie. But I think he's still quite old-fashioned, but the players seem to really enjoy playing for him. And I think you combine that with, obviously, his tactical awareness and his understanding of the game that clearly is there from what he's done with the national side and previously as a manager. I think it's a really good combination. So I think he deserves enormous credit for this, because the squad is probably inferior to some of the sides who didn't make it.
Yeah, maybe an awkward Sunday lunch coming up at Casa de Simpson, given that his son Jake is on the Stockport staff. But I'm sure Stockport will come again next season. They're well backed, aren't they? You'd expect them to be amongst the favourites to go up from League Two next term. All right, we're nearly done for this show and for this season. But of course, I've got a tweet for the boys to analyse. Sam, you might not have seen this. I'll read it out anyway. It comes from Pelly Ruddock and Panzu, who is one of the stories of the weekend. As we mentioned, he's gone from National League to Premier League with the same team and in the right order. He says, "This is not just my story, it's the story of every dreamer out there. At Luton Town, we've made history together and the journey's only just begun. Let's keep pushing boundaries, shattering expectations and creating memories that will echo through the ages. Hashtag Pelly Ruddock, hashtag PRM." Sam, is a lovely sentiment, but he does lose points for putting his own name as the hashtag twice.
Yeah, that's no good, is it? Echo Through the Ages. That's
Where's
a nice
he got that
way.
From? Yeah.
That's a nice way to sign off, isn't it? And I read a lot about Pelly Ruddock and Panzu leading into the playoffs, and he didn't disappoint, did he, with his celebrations and what have you. I think there was a lot of Vegas Thursday shouts bellowed at in the background of some other poor player or staff members' interviews. So yeah, he's full of life. I think a purple suit was mentioned as well by Rob Edwards in the lead up. You can hear him before you see him, and then you see the purple suit or something along those lines. So brilliant character. I don't know, is he going to be a regular feature next year, Clarkie? He may be after, I think, in terms of a holding midfielder in the battleground, yes, but never really got enough goals and assists for me if he's going to play as the two advanced midfielders. So they'll need to add a bit of craft in that position. So it might be a case of just altering his role in the side, because I don't think he's going to bring too much in front of the opposition's goal, as yesterday's couple of attempts showed. But what a story, though, for him. To get those promotions, it's hard enough to get him one. I never got one. I mean, he's had four promotions at the same club. That is incredible. And made the step up comfortably every time.
Yeah, and he's a great example, isn't he, to any player that's out there in non-league, you know, out in the National League or the National League North or South, that might be thinking, oh, you know, I'm never going to get there, or I'd love to be there. I think I'm good enough, but it seems too far off. Well, you know, he's not the only one, but he's gone out there and proved it can be done. And I think this is a sensational tweet. If it's his words, if it's his grammar, if he's just taken a little bit of time, had a bit of considered thought about it, I think it's a beautiful tweet. I really do. I think there's some great sentiment in there, but you can't be hashtagging your own name. So that is a yellow card.
I knew that I'd heard Echo Through the Ages before, and I've just double-checked it. And yes, listener, you knew this too, didn't you? It comes from The Simpsons, Season 3, Episode 16, Bart the Lover. As they're signing off the pretend letter to Bart's teacher, Homer says, "Let's end it with a love that will echo through the ages." So, I mean, that just makes me love Pelly Ruddock and Panzu even more. He's got two footballers' names and he quotes The Simpsons. We're having it. Good luck in the Premier League next year and to Luton as well. So that's his social media covered. What about ours, Adrian?
Well, I've enjoyed Sam's videos. I think he's pulled out two lovely post-match pieces of analysis. I think we're going to have to make that a bit more of a regular feature when either of us go to a game, yourself included, Matt. If you're at an EFL game, let's get on it. Let's give the people what they want. You can look at these videos on social media, Twitter at EFL What There, and Insta and TikTok. It's at What The EFL. It's pretty easy to remember. And yeah, we're going to try and put a bit of extra content on there as we get a bit more used to all this nonsense.
Quite sad, actually, thinking that we've covered everything from today's game, so I don't need to do a video today. And as I'm speaking to you now, the guys are out there with the lawnmowers preparing for what? What's the next? What can I preview in my video when I'm walking out of Wembley tonight? Ed Sheeran.
I was going to say, probably Beyonce, something. But she's at Spurs, isn't she? Tonight?
I think Styles is there soon, isn't he? And the boy Styles is it.
Callum, he was there this weekend, wasn't he?
There you go. I'll do a Harry Styles prediction teaser video on the way out to my car.
That is the kind of content you know our listeners are crying out for. But look, what are we going to do then? Are we going to just chip in with the odd pod during the summer? Is this us done?
I'm sure we'll throw in the odd one when something massive happens. I mean, I need to get in a three teams here going in one direction pun before we go, seeing as we're talking about Harry Styles. But yeah, we'll keep rolling. We'll drop the odd show throughout the summer. Many thanks if you've stuck with us, if you found us throughout the season. We didn't know how this was going to go when we kicked it off from the ashes of the Totally Football League show, but we've really enjoyed it and we are very grateful to everybody who's listened and to the great guests we've had on throughout the season as well. Too many to mention, but go back through the archives if you want to listen to some.
There's a few that's got promoted that have been on our show this season.
They sure have. We are the promoters.
Yeah, so next season, look, this could be the place to be. You get on it early doors and it could be a good luck charm.
Well, as Adrian says, we are going to drop a few shows throughout the summer. And yeah, if you're looking to go up a division, you could do worse and spend 10 minutes on Zoom with us. Last thing to mention, just a reminder for the offer from our friends at QuinnBet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinnbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. If you use that link, we get a little kickback as well, so we'd appreciate it. Remember, always gamble responsibly. Well, that's going to do it then from me, from Adrian, and from Sam. Many thanks for your company today and throughout the season. We will be back. Can't wait to get going with another EFL campaign in August. And yeah, we might drop a few shows in between now and then too. But enjoy your summer, whatever you're doing. We'll catch up with you soon. For now, though, it is goodbye.